up only.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running.
Hello and welcome to Up Only TV. I'm Ledger. We got a great show for you today. Before we get to it, let's talk about our sponsor, Blockfolio. You can go to uponly.tv/blockfolio. Make your first trade on Blockfolio today. Switch directly from one asset to another with zero trading fees. It is fully powered by FTX Books. It's a fantastic mobile interface. Go to uponly.tv/blockfolio. Thanks so much to the Blockfolio team for being our partner on this episode and all episodes of Up Only. Let's get straight to it. We've got great guests today, but first, hello to my friend Kobe. How you doing, buddy?
Mate, I don't know if I'm going to be able to concentrate during this episode. I've got like this correlation between us streaming and the market just fucking dumping drilled into my brain. So I'm just got the chart up and I'm just staring at it, watching like, please not this time. Please not this time. They're going to really believe it's something to do with us. But otherwise, I'm good. I'm good. Double in a day. And we've got a really exciting show. We've got the Nifty Gateway co-founder, Griffin, and artist. I was going to say like non-crypto artist, but I think just artist suffices. Ian, and they're going to like have a bit of a debate about our NFTs and the future of finance, maybe. Griffin, do you want to say hi and introduce yourself?
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me. Kind of ironic for the market to dump during a show called Up Only, but
it's really evil, to be honest.
It's really evil. Yeah, some whale out there is just fucking with you guys.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm Griffin Cockfoster. I'm one of the co-founders of Nifty Gateway. Founded it with my twin brother Duncan. We're owned by Gemini, the cryptocurrency exchange, run by the Winklevoss twins. And we're one of the biggest NFT marketplaces. So cheers. It's great to have me, or it's great to be on here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining. Ian, do you want to give a little introduction to yourself?
Yep. So my name's Ian Strange. I'm an artist. I've been practicing for the last 15, 20 years. I'm a friend of George's since forever, but I think the most unique thing about me is that I know very little about crypto, except that I think I follow about very few people on Twitter. And I know all I know about crypto is essentially through Kobe tweets, and that's about it. So I've got a single view of crypto only through what I've seen through there. So it's going to be really interesting. Though I mean, what George told me about everything, I've absorbed quite a lot, which is great. But, you know, my background as an artist, I've started in a background in street art and working in film. And then I created sort of large scale public installations and sculpture works, film works, photography works, have a reasonable museum history of exhibiting works, and I'm also the current guest artistic director at the Art Gallery of Western Australia, which is a state art museum in Western Australia at the moment, which is what I'm doing while I'm hiding out in Australia during COVID.
So it's like 6 a.m. for you right now.
It's early.
Yeah, well, thank you for staying up and coming on. Yeah, I've known you for like 10, 11 years. I think we met when you were doing street art in Bristol with Vermin. Yep. I don't know if it was Vermin, I can't remember. I own a bunch of your stuff, and I always feel a little bit like I am like a sort of a guy in a cult coming to you like, bro, like this crypto stuff, bro. And it's like every couple of years I'm like, bro, and you're like, you still talking about that, dude? I'm like, bro, but there's like art now. And you're like, yeah, but I've got some houses to set on fire, man. Like, I'm really busy. but thank you for coming on. I'm excited to have you chat about crypto. Someone in chat just said, is this guy Banksy? Can you confirm or deny whether you're Banksy?
I'm certainly not Banksy, no.
Before we get too deep, can I just say, like, I can't decide. Like, I've been thinking about it ever since Ian told me pre-show. Like, is it a really good thing that you're his only avenue to crypto, or is it like a really horrible thing? Like, I'm kind of torn on the concept, but yeah.
Well, I think for me, I mean, the my experience of Jord, I think the first time I ever heard about crypto was we were in London in 2012, 2013, and we were walking around. We went to like the Serpentine Gallery. with our girlfriends at the time were wandering around, and he was just on his phone the whole time. He's like, oh, I just made £10,000. I just made £20,000. I was like, I had no idea what he was doing. And then his phone ran out of battery, so he had to take my phone off me. Like,
just oh, shit. Yeah, that was so stressful. The
phone, and then just kept trading on my phone and then handed it back to me with all this shit installed. I had no idea what it was.
That was super just, stressful. Yeah,
it's been watching him go on this journey and the whole thing, and in the background has been really fascinating. But I've been very...
We were like I think we were just in the park by the Serpentine, and we were just like, everyone was trying to have a nice day, and I was like this.
Yeah.
And you know what, ever since that's all I've done. I've just stared at charts. That's it. Fuck.
I just seem to remember him being like, mate, every fucking generation has a gold rush, and this is the gold rush. And I just fucking merrily went on my way being an artist instead.
So When hold on, Kobe, I'm not done with the early Kobe stuff, because the audience does not have near enough early Kobe stories. Was he really annoying in like 2013 when he first started making a little bit of money and he was trying to shill you crypto, or was he pretty laid back about it?
I think George. Oh, how much am I allowed to tell stories about you, mate? Am I allowed to?
Yeah,
just George. All right. Well, no, he's just someone who's always had a plan. Like, I've never known this guy not to have a plan or like a methodology of like moving through life. But the dude's I'll call him anytime I need advice on like strategy getting through anything. So the dude's crypto just felt like another thing that he was doing at the time, but it just turned into like such a big thing now.
Kobe, yeah, is it true that you own more Bitcoin than the Winklevoss twins? Like, I've just heard a lot of people say that. So
how many Bitcoin do the Winklevoss twins own?
Should ask them. Yeah.
1%,
something like that.
Only 1%. Oh, bro! Yeah. I thought they were rich.
Yeah.
Didn't they like make Facebook or something? How come everyone that works at Gemini or within the Gemini umbrella has a twin? Is there like is there some like, you've got a twin, the Winklevoss is the twins? Is there like some secret like citadel, or do you like, is it cloning? Do rich people get cloned now? What's going on?
Yeah, it's the cloning. No, I think as twins, like, we all just feel more comfortable working with each other. You know, we try not to associate with non-twins more than we have.
Reasonable.
Fair enough. So, I guess sort of throughout the last sort of 10 years or however long, I've just been bugging you about crypto every now and again. And the latest time, I guess, was this summer when I was like, what's going to happen over the next sort of year is there's going to be an artist that does like digital first art, grows through crypto community, grows through putting art on chain, having digital ownership, and they're going to cross over into the real art world, like the traditional art world, the like institution of art, and they're going to be, you know, one of the biggest artists in the world. And today, ceremoniously, the Beeple sale went for $70 million, so the third most valuable piece ever sold by a living artist. How have you felt sort of like watching that happen? Like, what was it like when I was like, bro, like the tokens are on the art tokens are on the chain, bro?
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, I've got the receipts in my phone. I've got all these messages of you bugging me, being like, "You have to start now. When are we doing it?" And I've been. It's really interesting as an artist. I get so focused on being in the studio, getting the next project up, making things happen. It's like it's the thing that's right in front of your nose. It's always like making work, and I think it's could get my head out of that and thinking that bigger picture way was like a leap. And you're like always on me to get onto it, but it's been insane seeing how fast that happened as well. When you first brought it up, sort of never hearing what you had to like call me and explain the acronym to me. You had to explain the currency that sits under the acronym as well, and it was very patient. Still didn't know anything about it.
Griffin, how have you found it with, you know, I guess in December or November, the queue for like a Nifty drop was, you know, maybe a handful of days. People had two drops. How have you seen like the recent spike in demand change that like the people knocking on your door?
Dude, I literally had to shut down my email address. I had an email address on the Nifty site. It was like, email the founders whenever, griffin@niftygateway.com. But I had to shut it down because I was getting about 100 emails an hour and I just couldn't check it anymore. So I just, it's out of control. I don't know. Crazy time to be alive. And I'm sure it's only going to get worse with the Beeple sale today. So.
Yeah, I guess all the Beeple stuff will have repriced overnight, basically, or within moments as well. So how, I guess you've seen a huge influx of people wanting to produce work, people coming from traditional art backgrounds wanting to join blockchain art communities now, and also seen a huge influx of people wanting to collect and buy. Have you managed to deal with the that dual demand change and scaling with the team and the product and everything else?
Well, it definitely hasn't been easy, I'll say that much. I think from January to February, we grew 790% in a single month or something. Our monthly volume went up about 7 or 8x, and businesses really just aren't built to grow that much. A lot of stuff breaks. So it's been a tough few months on the team. It's fun to see everything take off so much, but we've all been working weekends. We're trying to hire like crazy. So if you know anyone, please pass them our way. And we're getting so much inbound interest. We're trying to figure out what makes a good NFT project and what doesn't, we're trying to figure out who's here to commit to the space and spend decades making NFTs that matter versus who's just trying to do a quick cash grab and try to launch projects the right way. So, a lot of stuff breaks when you grow that much, and it's been tough, is the long story short, but fun to watch. And it's fun to see everyone else find out about NFTs. So I've been jazzed about them for a while.
Yeah, I think there is that sort of a trend now where you're seeing people jump in and do a drop who have never, considered anything to do with crypto whatsoever. People who are not artists are doing drops, sort of collaborating with an artist and paying them to do all the work. How are you filtering that out? What's sort of the process?
Well, so we have a creative team and they've, been around for a while. We've all seen a lot of drops. We try to filter based on intentions, and we just try to launch NFTs that we ourselves would want to buy, right? That's our main heuristic. We just try to launch high quality stuff, but it's a lot tougher. I mean, it's almost a Bitcoin bull market. You don't know if people are in it for the right reasons. If someone's I can pick up a few million dollars, their intentions kind of shift. So I kind of wish we'd go back to the old days where we were convincing artists to do it and they put their heart and soul into it. But I don't know. We try to filter it. We just try to launch high quality stuff. We don't always get it right. And we just have to say no to a lot of people, which also fucking sucks because there's so many talented artists out there who we can't work with just because we only can do one drop a day or two drops a day. So I don't know, doing our best.
What was your pitch back then? So you go to an artist and you're listen, we're doing this thing. what did they say? What was the traditional pitch?
90% of the time they're just I have no idea what the fuck is going on. I'm like, the other 10% of the time, they're like, I have no idea what the fuck is going on, but sure, I might as well try it. That's kind of how it No, our pitch was we just tried to explain to them what an NFT is, explain to them that it was a trend, that other projects CryptoKitties had taken off in the past, and there was something there. It was just kind of a dormant period. And then we pitched them Nifty makes everything about collecting and selling NFTs really easy. You can just buy with a credit card. You can send it to someone else. You can trade it on our market and cash out your balance to your bank account or your Gemini account. So I don't know. We just pitched it as you should just try this. We think it's the future, but why not give it a go? And most artists said no, the vast majority said no, but a few were just yeah, I might as well try it. It seems cool. And now here a year later, I'm having to shut down my email. So things change quickly in the world.
When they said no, what were the main reasons? Was it I don't understand it? I'm busy.
Yeah. Don't understand it. I'm busy. A lot of artists, are very weary to try anything new. They see their careers as being fragile, especially the ones who are really, really big. They have to be very careful about what they do. And they really have to watch their career closely. That's my theory. And then, they didn't understand it. They didn't see why anyone would pay money for an NFT, and they were just too confused to really get it, which a lot of people are still confused today, but
do you know roughly how many artists y'all have had on the platform? And then what's that distribution in terms of the number of artists you onboarded?
Yeah. What do you mean by distribution?
How many artists you've onboarded in the last month versus the first 12 months?
Oh yeah. 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 I think it's around 200 or 300 now. I'm actually not even sure what the full number is. When we started, we were doing one drop every 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
We made like an event out of it. You know, it was like once every 3 weeks. We announced it like in a week in advance, and like it was a drop. Like the whole team would get on a video call together for it. And then we started doing them once every 2 weeks. Then we started doing them like once a week and then twice a week. And now we're doing them like once a day and like pushing multiple artists. And we'll probably start doing two drop days soon. So yeah, it's been like a lot more coming in recently. And that's just because people are starting to get it. But I also think NFTs are here to stay. Like I think, it, you know, in 5-10 years, that's when we'll see the real innovation. So like we always try to tell people to do it the right way and like make something awesome. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this guy, John Guido, if you scroll down a little bit. Yeah, John Guido, he's doing this that open edition drop. And like his stuff, he was actually in our very first drop ever on Nifty. And he sold a bunch of stuff for about $100 each. And now they're trading at around 1,000. And like he was very skeptical. We brought him into the Gemini offices and we pitched him. And the whole time he was sitting there, like he just looked so confused. And then afterwards he was like, all right, this sounds cool. Like I might as well give it a try. And I was shocked because like, I did not think he was going to go for it. Like I still thought he was like making a mistake or something, but yeah, he just sent us the assets. We like, you know, pitched everyone about them. We told him about John Guido as an artist. He's a really talented illustrator who's worked with Marvel, Disney, DC, and has some really great prints he sells and like has just done awesome stuff. So, yeah, he's pretty prototypical. Like he didn't get it, and like he was definitely very confused, but he's just decided to like give it a shot because he thought, why not? And now here he is like doing his second drop about a year later. So it's awesome to see. It's awesome to have him coming back onto the platform. And his art is just really cool. Like the detail, you can see the detail work. It's all drawn by hand. And it's just like really, really impressive stuff. We were blown away by that.
I love the video components on these too, where like you can put in these small animations and it's just like a subtle addition to what would be a physical piece. That's really nice.
Yeah, exactly. It just adds on to it a little bit. We always encourage artists to like take advantage of the medium, which a lot of artists who only operated in the physical medium before, like, you know, had some trouble with at first, which often happens when mediums shift. You know, there's the famous example of like the very first TV ads were just people reading out radio ads on a blank screen. And it's kind of like that. Like, so most artists like didn't create in the digital medium, but it's a very expressive medium. Like you can create so much cool stuff on a screen. Just no one ever thought of it as being tradable or like having value before blockchain technology like made that possible. So it's been pretty sick to watch. And like it's been cool to see the development of NFTs too on our platform, because like the caliber of artists and like the caliber of people we work with like only goes up, and like some really great people are getting involved.
So Ian, if you have to go full cynic, what are the, like, if you're getting pitched, like, you should come do this, it's a year ago, you have to go full cynic, what are the main questions you want to know? Like, co-founder of Nifty Gateways here, you can ask him the questions. What do you want to know? Why is this the dumbest thing in the world?
Oh, you're setting me up as a bad guy here. All right, okay. That's fine. But I'm not going to be the Luddite here. Like, I think it's actually amazing, but okay. I think what you're saying, I think what you said before with your artists, the concern would be artists are told that you build your prices slowly over time. You build it up with a gallery. You have to be really careful. You sell in really small quantities to a really limited pool of collectors. And it's about building prices over a lifetime slowly. That's managed by a gallery. It's a really closed network dealing with, and then there's all these indexes of success, which is like you go to auction slowly, you bring your prices slowly, you go to get to better and better galleries. And so you're told to be, like you said, like be really, really cautious as an artist. So then if you're sort of saying, well, if you're going to go to this thing and your prices are going to jump or you can't control your prices, what happens afterwards? Like what happens if suddenly I spike out? What happens if I sell it, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars? What in 5 years, what in 10 years time am I the one hit wonder artist, and then no one cares later, and I can't recover from that? That would be the main anxiety, I'd say.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great point, honestly. And like a lot of artists do worry about that. It's been pretty interesting to watch because, you know, I mean, artists have to be very careful about what their work is sold for and like who it's sold to. And it's the reason the gallery ecosystem exists. The internet and NFTs have kind of replicated a lot of those dynamics, but just like at the scale of the internet, and like, so much stuff is different. You know, early on, a lot of the artists taking risks on it were just the more open-minded ones. Like John Guido, you know, he wasn't selling his stuff in galleries. He was doing like contract work with Marvel and Disney. And like, he was like, you know, selling prints for for a few hundred dollars online, but you know, prints that were like decorative. He wasn't the kind of guy you'd find in a gallery like Gagosian or Pace Gallery. And it is pretty interesting because the whole world of like artistic creation is enormous, but the gallery ecosystem was like pretty small. So I do kind of think NFTs have kind of unlocked a lot of people who were willing to just like take a risk and like weren't concerned about the price of their art or like, you know, growing their career like that. And it's been interesting to watch. But, you know, I also totally get all those concerns. It's like artists do have to be very careful about that sort of thing. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. I think people, but it's also this way of thinking about money and trading. And I think it's come from this art world that was a very closed circuit. I think like before the interesting thing looking at this and through the lens of Jordan, seeing like sort of the limited exposure I've had, is that there was, you know, the art world was a very, very close thing right up into the 80s. It was kind of seen as a, from what I understand, kind of a handshake culture within a small unit of people trading art. And then, you know, in the 80s, the stock market opened up and all these stockbrokers got in and saw, okay, well, this is a, these objects, it's sort of a unregulated market, and we can kind of own 90% of the market. We can buy back our stuff at auction. We can manipulate these objects. They can, you know, now you're at a point where these objects sit in free ports. I mean, I literally don't see the difference between, you know, people, the traditional art world complaining about these as not being objects you can explore, when you also have like and enjoy in person, when there's all these free ports that have these works where you can't even see them anyway, with millions of dollars holding them. So there's not a difference. It's just like, it feels like that happening again, where all this new money, this new kind of capital coming into the art world, and it's being traded in different kinds of ways at different stages. But it's interesting though, as individual artists, when you're talking about these big moves of wealth and money, actually at a certain point, there is that fear that you get lost in the churn. You lose control over your own market. You lose agency over what happens with your work and where it goes. And I mean, you know, it's sort of pretty amazing that this conversation is happening today of all days, when you've got this, you know, I literally, you know, 2 hours before I'm meant to chat, my phone is popping up where it's like New York Times saying, you know, people say are like popping up. So it's like, this is real precipice moment for this new kind of art, new kind of market for art as well. So it's a really, you know, it's going to be a really interesting couple of years to see how this settles out.
And Kobe, was that you who bought the people at Christie's? Like, you don't have to say, like,
that's what I heard.
I heard it was a guy called Julian. That's all I heard. Someone called Julian. That's all I know. We thought temporarily everyone thought it was Justin Sun, didn't they?
Yeah, he got outbid, huh?
Widely publicized that it was Justin Sun for about 2 hours, and everyone was like, "What does this mean?"
Justin Sun found a way to get his name in there.
but then yeah, someone else won. Apparently, someone called Julian. But let's wait and see. So Ian, in your art communities, how are NFTs spoken about now? Like, is everyone sort of talking about it? Is it, because in at least on the internet communities that I've seen, there's become sort of a fracture between pro crypto artists and people minting NFTs and like sort of getting on with it, and then people that have become very anti crypto artists and are trying to cancel crypto artists for ruining the environment or something. Like, who knows? And there's been a bit of a fracture, and it seems like there's a lot of discourse about it, both positive and negative. I'm sure loads of people just don't care as well. But like, what are people in your world sort of talking about?
I've kind of got a foot in both camps, because I guess my background, I first sort of came up through that whole street art scene. So I know, you know, Thank You X, and I know Lush, and I know all these, and I know those guys really, really well. And also I came up through a whole group of artists who were independent artists. And for myself, I've never ever signed with a gallery. I've only done independent contracts with galleries for projects. So I've always had that way of working where you're always looking at, how do you fund a project? How do you work? How do you move in a nimble way as an artist just to make the next project? How do you fund the next thing you want to do? And so that community of artists I came from, that is really that, I guess, more kind of DIY self-representation kind of group, those people have just embraced it 100%, because it's just another mode of supporting an art career. And like, being an artist is hard enough. You don't have to, you know, it's one of those things where if you can fund a project, if you can find an income stream that can keep you going, I mean, you should be embracing that. And I think there's a whole swath of people. Interestingly, it's those independent artists that have embraced it faster. And I think it's the other side of it, and it is people who are kind of almost bought into that. They're sort of drunk the Kool-Aid of the sort of the ladder that is set out in front of you after art school, which is like you go to the small gallery, you then get to the medium gallery, you get critical writing about you, then move up to the middle-sized gallery, you build your prices over time. And I think some people are so built into that system that it's hard to think outside of it as well. So I think they're, you know, I can imagine if you're an artist that's bought into that 100% to see someone almost have this sort of this beeline right to the top really fast, you'd be quite cynical about it.
But isn't that just a democratization of the process? Like someone's merits or the reach that they create through their own work is kind of what allows them to rise to the top, because the internet's just such a easier medium to expand on. Whereas in the regular art world, I don't know if it's this way, but I imagine it's like a lot of other things where it's super relationship driven, you know, like you just got to have the right relationships with the right people to move on to the next gallery.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think they've sort of done data and charting of that, where basically, you know, success in the art world is actually 100% relational, and it's about tiny networks of people as well. And they've managed to be able to track that. I think there's some really great charts that show how like 90% of the art world will know each other and have always known each other. It is a completely closed circuit as well. So I think there is that level of nepotism and relationships that lock down that side of the world. But I think also it's probably simplistic to say that there's one art world, like it's this one big orb. It's sort of like these overlapping Venn diagram. I think there's just there's sections and parts of the art world as well, and different ways of attributing value to things as well. So I think it's I think like sort of Griffin was saying, is there's, you know, it's you'll get a headline with money, but then also it's about a high quality product that will actually exist and people still care about in years to come as well. I think that's the, if that's the aspiration, I think that's the, you know, I think that's what all like sincere artists are trying to do, is actually make something that will exist longer than, you know, a year or 5 minutes that people care about, you know.
Griffin, I have a question about how y'all advise artists on pricing. Because with drops, like there's the one of ones, and then there's collections where there might be 20 or 100 or open editions. When you're talking to them, and it's significantly different than when someone has like a single piece of something to distribute, how do you discuss that with artists for them to be able to plan kind of the best way to go to market from a pricing perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have a variety of approaches, and again, it's like more of an art than a science, and it's also evolved a lot over time, right? Like the pricing really depends on a lot of things. Right now we're pricing all our open editions in like the $1,000-$1,500 range, because the market is like so frothy. Like if you did a lower priced open edition, like maybe you'd end up with like 20,000 editions floating out there or something, which like probably no artist wants. And like, you know, you want to price it so that like it gets in the hands of the right people. But you can like play around with a lot of stuff. Like people had the idea to do the $1 drop. I think that was him first. And like, that was fucking brilliant. I actually own one of those. And like it last sold for $150,000 or something. Cause like that's a mechanism where when it drops for a dollar originally, everyone's like fighting to get their hands on it. And like, it means so many more people find out about it. So it's like the price ends up a lot higher than if you'd like started those at $10,000 or something. It's like someone told me a story about auctioning something off on eBay, where it's like if they took a $500 bike and they started the auction at $10, then it would go for like $800. But if they started the auction at like $500, then it might not even sell at all.
So, and Nifty already has the functionality built in to where secondary sales do feed a royalty back to the artist, right?
Yeah. That's built into the Nifty platform.
Yeah. So when he sells for $1, and then it goes for $150,000, he's getting that percentage on the secondary sale, which is like, that's pretty groundbreaking for an NFT versus a physical piece.
Oh, it totally is. Yeah. That was another thing actually that really, I think, helped us pitch the artists that they just liked. And that kind of just sprung up organically from the early days of NFTs. I don't really know how it started, but like a lot of the early NFT art platforms and just like, early NFT traders like were always thought it was really important to give a secondary sale back to the artist, just because it didn't exist in the traditional art world. And it, you know, now that it's like established, it's like very here to stay. So, you know, if you're an artist, you can do all these fun things, or you can do a raffle where it starts off at like $10 or something, or like pack product projects or something we've done, where it's like you pay a fixed price and then the NFT you get is like a varying scarcity, kind of like buying a pack of, you know, Pokemon cards or something. So we like try to play around with it a lot. It depends on the market. It depends on a lot of different things, you know, and minting costs are insanely high right now. So like that's another factor. But we're doing a refactor of our smart contracts where we can mint all our editions in a single transaction. So that'll let us do like an open edition for $50 or something if we wanted to, because it would make it just way cheaper to mint all of them at one time. So it'd be fun to like bring those back. The NFT behind me, this was a $40 open edition. And like, I worked with the artist directly. His name's Mike. He's amazing. Slime Sunday. And like, you know, he like deferred to us on pricing, and like we pitched him on the $40 open edition and he loved it. I think 419 were sold originally for $40 each. And now these are all worth $15,000 like a pop. This Nifty has just like exploded. So, you know, you can do a lot of fun stuff with pricing, and it's good because it sets the market up well, depending on how you do it.
Hey, Kobe, before we're halfway or almost halfway through, but before we go further, we need to let people know that they can win the competition today. Blockfolio is supporting us, giving away $1,000 two times over. So we're going to give away $2,000, and our guests have to help us choose. Kobe, can you give the rundown of what the competition is going to be?
Yeah, so since we've got an artist on here, and we've got someone who runs an NFT platform and has his own creative team, I thought that the viewers would have to create a work of art of their own. But you've only really got half an hour, so I don't have high expectations.
Griffin, I do.
What do you want to see in the work of art? Because otherwise people are going to go steal something offline and play it off as their own, because we've just got scammers in the chat.
Dude, damn, you're putting me on the spot here.
All right, Ian, I'll put you on the spot instead.
Yeah. All right. It's an animal wearing a hat, but Griffin has to choose what animal.
It's a leopard.
All right, a leopard wearing a hat. And does this
a
need
bowl
to
be a hat? It has to be a bowler hat.
Is this a illustrator thing, a hand drawn thing?
Whatever they want. It could even be done in performance dance if that's the form of expression they enjoy.
All right.
Yeah, they can, yeah.
We need proof of originality while you're at it. But yeah, so all you have to do is draw or, you know, create a picture of a leopard wearing a hat and at UpOnly TV and Blockfolio, and our guests will pick their favorites. Each of them will pick one, $1,000 to each person who wins.
While we're pausing, I must point out we're $400 away from all-time high on Bitcoin Coinbase. So if we do get all-time high during the stream, it means the curse is broken, UpOnly is back, and did you prepare some kind of celebratory transition screen with fireworks or not?
You're putting me on the spot now to create something. If we go to an all-time high, I'll find something that I can throw in the transition. However, I just want to note that people thought they had this, like, you know, short UpOnly episodes alpha. And of course, by the time people like catch on to something, it's gone. So, you know, good luck to the shorters.
Now we've said this. What? Now we've said
it's
this.
It's going down. That
was it. I was going to drop to like 40K. Yeah.
Yeah, just baited ourselves. yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about the environmental impact, because I saw that the other day, ArtStation, I think it was, were about to do an NFT marketplace or add some NFT functionality, but they got cancelled by their own users and had to sort of take it back. We're not going to do that anymore. We're sorry. Have you had much of this? Have artists on your platform had much of this?
Yeah. So we have. Like, I mean, artists are getting hit up about it all the time. Like, we see it all over Twitter. We're trying to like coordinate and write up a response on how we feel about it. Cause I think there's just a lot of misunderstanding. You know, I think it's natural. You know, DeFi users are not worked up about the environment, even though like DeFi transactions account for far more block space than NFT related transactions. You know, I think it's kind of like a shifting demographics thing, but yeah, you know, I think it would just be good to spread some education and sites like CryptoArt.WTF like perpetuate the idea that somehow a single transaction leads directly to emissions created, which is like really not how things work at all. And like a lot of people just like totally misunderstand it. So it's one thing I think where we need to be a lot more forceful and upfront and formulate kind of nifty gateways response and just like do some education about the way blockchains really work. I think, cause yeah, there's just a lot of people who don't really know enough about the technology to understand the electricity consumption aspect.
Do you think that education works? Because it feels a little bit like we're in the post-truth era where the only thing that matters is which mob you've joined and which sort of side of the argument you've aligned yourself with. And even if we're a well-reasoned argument with some facts is presented, I, like me as a mob member, I'm going to go, I don't care about that. You're just trying to propagandize me. I'm going to just like keep coming at your door. So do you think it even matters? Can you say anything?
Dude, you're so jaded, man. Damn, what happened to you? Too much time on right. Twitter.
He's been in crypto for a long time.
This is what happens, I guess. Huh? Yeah. No, I don't know. Yeah, education definitely matters. You know, obviously, people do love to create online mobs, but a lot of the time, like, they're based on misunderstanding now. And then I do kind of think, like, especially with crypto, like, there's a lot of uproar around Bitcoin in the environment a few years ago. It's kind of died down now. But obviously, Bitcoin uses way more electricity than Ethereum. But the users of Bitcoin don't really, I don't think they're the same demographic of people who are like worked up about the environmental response. And then people are, you know, working around the clock on Ethereum to transition it to proof of stake. Like the solutions are coming. People do care. You know, I think these are real problems and like we do try to address it. But, you know, I think like NFTs deserve a forceful defense because like it's valuable technology. Like blockchains are a really valuable technology. Like, yeah, they use electricity, but it's worthwhile to use that electricity. And like NFTs are a very small part of Ethereum in general. So I think artists are totally getting maligned and targeted unfairly. And like, it's really, really frustrating to see. I do think some of the people like doing it don't have the best intentions would be my take on the situation. Like, I do kind of think they're just trying to whip up a mob for its own sake. So that's been frustrating to see. And artists are the last people who should be like targeted over this because like, you know, for the first time in their lives, like, or, you know, a lot of these digital artists, like, never had a way to make money from creating digital art before. And, like, for the first time in their lives, like, they have something that's, like, really meaningful. And, like, the environmental impacts are, like, strongly misunderstood. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Nifty is, like, we're working on, like, helping our artists push back and, like, pushing back ourselves and, like, educating some people about how this technology actually works. Just because I think if people grasp the nuances better, like, they wouldn't be so upset. But of course, you're right. Social media doesn't do nuance. Like that's.
I feel like I just completely missed the boat on this. Like I thought it was mostly a meme, people talking about the environment with NFTs, but it's real, huh? Like there's serious pushback on it.
Yeah, yeah. That's why all those accounts got banned. There was like, you know, like the Stock to Flow guy.
Yeah, Willy Woo and all them.
Yeah, because they like mass reported them to like get rid of their accounts because they're like killing the planet. You know what? I think it's quite a useful narrative that NFT artists are ruining the planet thing because when people talk about proof of work generally, now I'm just saying, yeah, it's just because of the NFT minting. Everything else is like super chill. Like there's no energy used. But when they mint the NFTs, it's driving it up. We just got to get rid of that bit. And then we just focus the blame on one set of people. That I quite like it.
Yeah. DeFi is good for the environment, but it's just the NFTs. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't ask you anything about the environment because for one of your artworks you bought an entire street and set all the houses on fire. That's very wasteful.
I'm gonna be set on fire anyway. I donate a lot of money to fire departments to do that. my carbon footprint for a few of those artworks is not great. I would say though there is a really, I mean, working in the museum space is an equal argument that talks about buying artworks and storing them and then having to be kept within a few degrees temperature, long-term storage of stuff. So actually within physical museum space and with physical objects, there's a huge conversation about the carbon footprint of museums that collect actual physical objects and actually what it means to actually preserve things in those states as well. And so the footprint of those museums and shows touring around the world is actually a massive conversation within institutions as well as how we can sort of reduce that and what it actually means. So it's interesting. At least the artworks you're making don't need to be climate controlled in perpetuity.
Yeah, and framed in wood. Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. I think a lot of these debates boil down to sort of this binary outcome of, do you believe this activity deserves any of the world's resources at all? And a lot of the people who are anti-crypto art, they believe that crypto art, blockchain in general, has no utility and no place in the world, and it's completely pointless. It's only speculation, late-stage capitalism. And if you believe that, of course you think, like, no, even if it's using, like, very little energy, you're going to think it's too much. And you can make the a similar argument about, like, storage of art and climate-controlling art. Does it have a place in the world? Does it deserve any of the world's resources? And if you just split people into those two groups, of whether they believe that or not, I think it really simplifies the debate, and you can just sort of agree to disagree a little bit. So Griffin, I want to ask you, what are the most exciting and the most disheartening trends in NFTs at the moment? Like, what stuff that you think is super cool, and what stuff that you just look at and you go, oh bro, did we start this? Is this our fault?
Did we do it? I don't know, dude, that's a great question. Most exciting, like, I just think it's exciting to see, like, people notice it, and like, it's like a situation where there's smoke, there's fire, you know. Like Bitcoin in 2017, like the market got way ahead of itself. Like it jumped up to $20,000. Like I was actually in it then, but like it was like right after I graduated from college. Like I like bought a little Bitcoin and Ethereum, but then I sold it. Like I didn't understand what was going on at all. And like that was the experience of most people who bought Bitcoin then. Like, you know, they just like heard about it a little bit and they heard it's the future, but like, you know, they weren't in it for the right reasons. And then there was kind of a winter. And like now it's really rebuilt, and like all these amazing talented people are building in crypto, and like now this Bitcoin bull run, like, you know, it's for real. Like it's from people understanding the technology and like investing and smart money, like holding for the long term. Yeah, even though it got a little ahead of itself in 2017. I think there are a lot of parallels to the NFT market right now, just like anecdotally based on the friends of mine who are buying and all my mom and her friends buying NFTs. Like it seems like a lot of people are maybe like getting a little ahead of themselves, and like there's a bit of froth, like I think, to be perfectly frank. And like, yeah, you know, the market's gotten a bit ahead of itself, but at the same time, like, yeah, where there's smoke, there's fire. Like it's doing that because like NFTs are like such an important technology, and they're a breakthrough that's here to stay. So I'm excited about like to see this adoption. And like, that's also the most disheartening thing though, is like, I don't like people who just like Robin Hood traders getting into buying NFTs just to speculate, and like short-term momentum traders buying NFTs. Because like I feel bad for the artists. Like as an artist, that's not who you want really owning your work, right? Like you want the people who like have a connection with your artwork and like find it meaningful to own it, and like don't really care about the price. Like that's much, much better. So I don't like that. And like I hope some of the market froth goes away, and like people do some more research and like start collecting to collect and like buy stuff for the right reasons. And I think that'll happen over the long term. And like it's really heartening to see all the people finding out about NFTs and like this validation that they're such an impactful technology. But yeah, you know, I think it'll just take some time, but they'll like grow the right way and like compound over years.
What are some things that you think y'all will be selling over the coming years that people aren't thinking about today? Like, will you get outside of art? Will you be a music platform, or will you go even further than that? Like, what do you expect Nifty Gateway will have on it in addition to what people think of today?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I will say we want to branch out past art, and we're working on ways to do that. There's a lot of great like sports NFTs that can be sold. Like that's one area we're looking at very closely. And like that's a really exciting opportunity, because obviously projects like NBA Top Shot have gotten, you know, incredible traction, but the athletes don't see any money from that. You know, that's just all like the league licensed. Like if you're buying a LeBron James highlight, LeBron James doesn't get a dollar from that. So with Nifty, we can go straight to the athletes, and we can provide them a way to sell this like, you know, sick future digital memorabilia to their fans directly. And like, they see the money from that. Again, it's like circumventing middleman and like letting like the athletes, you know, make the money like that corresponds to their brand value. I do think there's other stuff like music NFTs where the innovation is just like just getting started, and NFTs that are tied into physical events, like NFTs that maybe like were given away at a concert or something, or like only given away to 50 people who were in a certain place. And those, you know, really like get a story behind them. And then, yeah, I think like the second order effects of like a world where most people, like a large number of people own NFTs is really interesting. Like the same is true of the internet. Like the internet started off like, and it was like a fun thing. And like people were like looking at pictures of their friends online. And now the fact that everyone is on the internet and it drives so much of society, it really has changed the face of the world. like in some bad ways, to be fair, like kind of like the tribalism you're talking about. I feel like, I mean, Twitter to me seems like, or social media in general seems to me like the biggest cause of that. But it's also had like these remarkable effects where like you two can just like launch your own show, and like Kobe has 250,000 Twitter followers, you know, and like he can just like crack jokes and show Bitcoin to everyone. Like, I don't know. And like that like allows Bitcoin to take off in the first place. So like the second order effects of NFTs will be like really, really impactful. And it's exciting to see. I don't know what's going to happen, but anyway, kind of a long-winded answer.
No, it's good. I appreciate it.
Yeah, very good. And Ian, how are you seeing like the, like how are you imagining augmenting your art and like how you create and like often like a lot of installation stuff, a lot of things where you kind of have to be there or you have to experience it through like longer form video to sort of experience the art. How are you imagining augmenting that alongside NFTs? Is there a world where they coexist? Is it like a separate thing? Just what are your general thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think working in photography and video, it's sort of interesting because it's I think a lot of people are selling photo editions. You've got the same sort of pushback where people go, well, can't you just keep reprinting that photo? But you create a limited edition of photographs you sell. You know, I make 5 photographs, they get physically sold, they sit in museum collections, you never really reprint them. And it's sort of that same thing of like, how do you edition something? And the same thing with video art, that's the same. My work gets sold into collections as videos. And then that sits, you literally deliver a hard drive to a museum that goes into a collection. So it's, we're already kind of in that space anyway. It's just actually about putting that online. I think what is exciting for me and a lot of artists is this idea that you could, I guess like the artist, Christo and Jean-Claude, who do like wrap the entire buildings, they as a couple would be able to afford to wrap those whole buildings by doing sketches and drawings of what they wanted to do in real life. They sell that concept art. They make the millions of dollars they need to be able to go and make these incredible installations. The idea that you could actually pre-fund these massive projects with completely independently as an artist is absolutely insane. Like, I think that the actual agency of not having to go through funding bodies, not having to go to philanthropists, not having to go to have these gatekeepers of museums and festivals and biennales, actually the ability to go out and fund massive projects as well and fund projects and create autonomy as an artist as a pathway is really exciting, because you're actually then, you know, you're creating entire careers that are not dependent on the existing ecosystems that are already there, which is just totally revolutionary.
Have you seen much of that, Griffin? People doing a drop and then sort of coming back and a few months later or however long later and being like, here's the thing that the drop sort of funded?
Dudes, we haven't seen too much of that, but that's like a brilliant idea. Like, I love it. I don't know. I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, that's like a game changer. And a lot of the artists like do a drop and they include some physical component or something. And then like, or they gamify the drop in some way. And then like for the next drop, they like level up and you know, that they come up with something brilliant. And I feel like that's just an example, what Ian said, of like what can be unlocked. And that's a sick idea. That's almost like buying an investment in an art project that kind of needs some like startup capital to get off the ground. But all the best projects are like that, you know, like they take effort. So that's sick.
I think for me as an artist, that the way I've always thought about it is if someone's buying your work, they're not buying that work. They're buying you spending the rest of your life making that work worth even more. And so that idea of just reinvesting in you to actually just keep going and keep pushing as well. And that idea of direct capital that comes straight into you as a, you know, for lack of a better term, like a small business that's just going to actually go out there and just keep making bigger things that keep promoting. And I think that's how, you know, a lot of artists who work in the same space that I work on, that's how they do it. They're like, you make money from your sales then get 100% reinvested in the next project, the next exhibition, the next installation that then levels you up, that gives you a better price point, that lets you double down again. That sort of, you know, you spend, and I think artists have been doing this forever, is like if you're a lifer, you bet the farm every time, you know, you just keep doubling down and keep going bigger and bigger.
I love it. Yeah. NFTs, from that perspective, NFTs are just like a technological improvement on the old, you know, way to do things. Just like Bitcoin is like just a technological improvement on gold, but like NFTs are art that's like way more liquid, way easier to like trade and send to someone around the world, and like has perfect authenticity. That's something that I think like contributes to a lot of the NFT valuations, is just the fact that it's like perfectly authentic. Whereas for a lot of artists like Andy Warhol, you know, from what I've heard, like the committees that formed to authenticate his artworks, some of them had to disband because, like, you know, it could be so easy to fake some Andy Warhol stuff that's just like a Campbell's soup can, like printed on a piece of paper. Like that's the kind of thing that's like would be really easy to fake and like almost impossible to authenticate. So like NFTs just being so liquid and like accessible and like having perfect authenticity means it's kind of just like a better technology for artists to like, you know, fund their visions and like take investment like that.
I generally like to think of an NFT. I hate the fact that it actually is called an NFT. Like you have to learn what the word fungible means, like how a token applies to it. But I like to think of them essentially like as a digital title. And when you apply a title to something like this assignment of ownership, it just starts to click a lot better in terms of those applications. So I feel like it makes sense to be able to, you know, use an NFT as like the backing, like you talked about, for a project, whether it's digital or physical or a process or whatever. It definitely clicks better to me that way.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I saw a great tweet too. It's like the NFT is just the autograph, you know, or like, and Duncan had a great tweet thread where like really what drives the value of something is authenticity. It's like you could print out a baseball card and like make it look like an original Kobe baseball card. And even if it was a perfect replica, like anyone who knows that like you're just the one who printed it out will think it's worthless. Like really what gives things value is authenticity. And NFTs are just like the best technology for creating that sort of authenticity.
Cool. That makes a lot of sense. I recognize that I've kept you both very long, so I'm just going to look at the chat for a moment. I want to make sure that the chat gets to ask anything they want to ask.
Kobe, while you do that, Ian, can you kind of walk us through what we're watching on the stream? Like, this is Suburban Interventions, and it's got a lot, several pieces of yours in there. Can you talk about the process there?
Yes, this was a documentary series at ABC. It's a TV station in Australia. Made on my work a couple of years ago as well. And so I was kind of showing, I guess, the process of my practice as well, which is sort of starts in the studio with sketches and concepts and drawings on houses. And then I kind of work with people. I think this is an earlier video, but if there's some other videos, maybe you could show the works. But mostly what I've done for the last 10 years is create these large installations working with real houses. So it's working with communities, getting access to homes, then creating these large paintings and sort of directly onto the houses. And I work with film and lighting crews. I shut down the street, I light the house, and then I film and photograph it. And then the film and photographs of like the suburbs and the works become these sort of installations in galleries. And so then I sell the photographs and the video work to then fund the next project. And so it's sort of, I've been doing that for the last sort of 10, 15 years, I think, something like that. And it's one of those things that just keeps growing and getting bigger. And it has been funded, I guess, predominantly through a traditional art model of, you know, selling concept sketches to be able to afford to make the work, and then selling the photographic works in galleries and selling them into like museum collections that then let me fund the next project.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
And the amount of space that this takes up, obviously, you know, with like homes, do these get broken down or are they typically preserved?
This work that's actually a replica of my childhood home. So that was rebuilt in a warehouse in Sydney, that one. But most of the works are working directly with houses and communities where they're either foreclosed and be demolished. I did one project in Christchurch, New Zealand after the earthquake there. And so that was working with the local museum and the community there. There were 16,000 homes scheduled for demolition after the earthquake. So I worked with the community and former residents of the houses to actually fix the houses and create these installations on the houses that were then photographed and shown in a local museum. And then that became a way of sort of archiving these houses that were before they disappeared, working with the same community there. And so that's sort of, there's a really long process involved in those projects, which, it's not sort of typical going into a studio and making work. They sort of normally take years to set up and execute. So I'm kind of always working at many things at once.
Awesome.
Griffin, chat wants to know, where do you think IPs will go, especially with consideration IP laws will go with regards to NFTs?
Well, I don't know. That's a tough one. Like, my mom's an IP lawyer, actually. Probably won't go anywhere for now. Like, I feel like the current system serves the incumbents very well. So we'll see. I think IP holders will get into making NFTs. But, you know, I think it'll still be the same thing where they will, like, request takedowns of any, like, copyrighted material and stuff like that. Maybe long-term, though, IP really will be rebuilt, like, fully on, like, go fully on-chain, which I think is another, like, larger trend I think is definitely going to happen, where a lot of things that are done by the legal system just get replaced by, you know, smart contracts and on-chain activity. And that would be a sick world to see, where trademarks and stuff are sold as NFTs or as, like, ERC-20 tokens. But that's probably, like, phase two. You know, that'll probably be, like, 5 to 10 years. Like, I don't see that happening soon.
Another question is, have you seen much traditional art? Like, as you said, it's like the autograph. Have you seen much traditional art having its ownership tokenized digitally?
Yeah, well, we did see that group of collectors destroy a Banksy and then turn it into, like, an NFT, like, you know, basically just take a picture of it and destroy the original physical piece of art. And, like, that seems to have done pretty well, which is an interesting trend. You know, it's all about, like, what a collector pays. So if that continues to work, then maybe physical art gets tokenized in that manner. A lot of people have talked too about connecting a piece of physical art to a token and, like, using the token to, like, track authenticity, but that's something I don't think is going to work, because there's really no way to, like, actually connect a physical thing to a blockchain token. Like, you know, you can never really authenticate. Like, any sort of physical, like, authentication in the piece could also be faked. So I would say that's a trend I don't think will happen, but I do think it is interesting to see if more people destroy physical artworks and kind of, like, tokenize them. And if collectors, you know, as long as collectors accept that, then it works. That's all it takes, really.
Yeah, I saw the Banksy get burned. It was like a 1 of 12 or something, and I think it's now worth more than the original art was. Very interesting. Another question. There's a lot of questions for you, Griffin, which are thematically the same thing, but I'm not going to read them out individually. But as a summary, the question is: I know. An artist who I think is really incredible. I think he could do a really amazing drop on Nifty, but the queues now go back till 2023 or however long, or you stop replying to my email. Yeah, 2029, you didn't reply to my email. Now we know you've canceled your email inbox. What should someone that's new to the NFT space do? How should they get started in crypto art? What would you recommend to someone?
Okay, yeah, to get started in crypto art, I think, you know, the traditional art world offers, like, a really big guide. I would get on social media, because the crypto art world lives on social media. You know, I would create meaningful works and start, like, create a narrative behind your art. Like, whatever your story is, like, make sure to tell your story and, like, tell it publicly. I would definitely start on one of the open sites, like OpenSea or Rarible. And, you know, I would just, like, try to, like, be authentic to who you are, to the world, and just, like, start small. Like, being an artist, I think, is also, you know, it's kind of similar to being a startup, where it's like, you need, like, small wins that just, like, build on top of each other. And, like, so, like, just, like, go try and make the first sale, like, you know, like, one step at a time, like, you know, find a piece of art that's meaningful to you and, like, make a sale and then just, like, build it up from there. And yeah, you know, I would say it's also, like, definitely very tough to be an artist, like, and the NFT space is, like, very crowded right now. And I'm sure a bunch of artists are pouring in, and, you know, Nifty itself, like, has, you know, a huge amount of demand, and it's really challenging to figure out, like, who to work with. But, you know, yeah, I would say, like, focus on small wins adding up, and focus on, like, telling your story to, like, who you are, and think about, like, what, you know, who you are and, like, what you have to offer the world and, like, what you can do that's different and, like, makes you stand out.
Cool. There you go. If you're an artist in the chat, there you go. There's your advice. One of the questions says, "Good day, Ian. How are you, mate? Are we going to see a drop from you now?" But it's, like, written in a way that is supposed to be Australian sounding, I think, which I'm not going to attempt.
Oh, right. That makes me feel so comfortable. Thank you.
Don't worry. The Americans can't tell the difference between British and Australian accents anyway.
Okay, right. Round my vowels more.
The question is, like, is this something you're interested in doing? Can we expect something from you? Have you thought about it any more than me just bothering you?
Well, yeah, it's definitely something that I think what we were talking about before, if it's a model where it can be if there's a way of doing it as like it's concept art that actually funds a project, I'd love to do that. I think that's just, it's actually what I've been working my whole career towards doing, is that autonomy just to make projects that don't have to sit in a gallery. You don't have to worry about them. Actually, most of my projects I make and I have to figure out how to actually make money afterwards as well. And the idea that they can be funded up front with concept sketches and drawings and ideas that it actually builds out to, that would be I'd love to explore being able to do that, because it would just be a totally, it's a model that already existed in the art world in a really closed circuit, but then just opens it up in a way that that'd be really kind of revolutionary. And certainly for my practice and artists who work like that.
So it's a maybe. It's a maybe. I'm hearing a maybe. It's going to be 2 years from now.
I'll call you. We'll do it.
2 years from now, I'm going to be me bothering you about crypto again. Yo, it's still happening, by the way. Are there any plans to allow offers via prepaid ETH on NG?
On Nifty? Yeah, there are. Yeah, that's a feature we're working on pushing. Hopefully that should be out very soon. That's a very needed feature. And also letting you pay with other cryptos. I mean, yeah, really the business grew 8x in a single month, month over month. And I don't think any business would be, well set up to deal with that. So we're playing catch up on a lot of stuff. And robustness is the first focus, as well as fixing that. And then, prepaid offers with prepaid Ethereum is a great feature that we really want to do. And we hope to have that out within a few weeks. So.
Yeah. Amazing. While we're doing feature requests, can you please organize my offers by largest first?
Yeah, that's
my offers page. Thanks, mate. Thanks, cheers.
Going through my offers page, there's 24 pages of them, and looks like offers. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's like people spamming $1 hoping that I misclick and stuff.
Yeah.
And
then,
And final question, do you have any big names lined up that you can drop? Have Disney got in touch being here comes the Mickey Mouse NFT?
Oh, man. We have some very big names, but no, I'm not going to drop them. You'll see. Just stay tuned.
No breaking news for us today.
No breaking news. No breaking news and no all-time high.
You cursed it literally as soon as we said the curse is broken. It dropped $300-$400.
That was actually me. I'm just trying to make the content. I actually just market sold everything just to make that happen. All right, so the only thing left for us is we have to decide a leopard to win $1,000. You each get to choose one. Ledger, can you give them a link somehow how they can browse the entries? Ian, you have to choose one. You can't choose Gareth or Rob if they've entered. No picking our mutual friends. Griffin, you've got to pick one as well. They don't have to mint it. It's just going to be on a tweet somewhere. And the best two win $1,000. I'm looking for real artistic talent. I'm not looking for someone just sent me a bowler hat that was leopard skin. That don't win anything.
All right, I'm putting a link in the Zoom chat for y'all. And you can see all of the mentions to up only.
How many entries did we get?
I don't know, a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Oh wow, the first one's pretty cool. Damn.
How
do we know that they weren't plagiarized?
Well, we got them to do a leopard in a bowler hat, didn't we? So I think it's probably quite. If they found someone that's already done a leopard in a bowler hat, I think they deserve to win while cheating.
Man, one of them has the Up Only logo in the background, which is nice. That's Doodle XR.
I like the one adding a monocle. That's a good touch.
Wait, there's no way this is legit? There's no way this has been just done in
Which one are you talking about? That one?
I've added to the Zoom chat. Look at that one, Ledger. Look at that.
Did you link it?
Is it right on your screen?
Yeah, that one is great.
Do you think that's legit? Oh yeah, they've written their name.
Yeah,
the
they yeah, this legit. Is what we asked for. They authenticated it.
Holy shit! Some of these are actually very good.
Yeah, some of them are actually quite good. This one's just a meme saying he streamed. Dump it.
Y'all have I'm glad it's not me and Kobe picking, so y'all be thinking about it.
I
think I've got my choice.
All right.
Okay.
Wow. Throw it in the Zoom chat and
I think that's the one. That's the one. That's my pick.
The one that I have up right now.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
The Phil. This one right here, Phil Bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Phil Bill.
Done.
Nice little crayon picture. He even has a chart in the background. You can tell, like, this was literally just done for us. That's very impressive. So, Phil Bill, you've won $1,000. DM me. Scammers, do not DM me. They've been hitting me hard every single time. And then, Griffin, it's up to you.
Yeah, I think you guys think this one is legit? I can't tell if I just dropped one in the chat.
Ooh, we have a alternative link. Yeah, that's quite good. Hold on. We don't know who it's by. We're going to have a mystery.
I reckon this was just a Photoshop filter, though.
Yeah, I think they just added it. I'll go with the one. Yeah. I get to pick another one?
I think we have to go with that one. I'm not trying to steal your pick, but the one that we opened first with by Excalibur, where it was like, we were questioning whether this was actually real and he's just done it.
Yeah.
Go up a little bit more.
This. That one. Oh no!
I have to go all the way down.
Yeah. That one's great. I love that one. Love it.
All right.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Damn, someone just drew this. Yeah. Right now.
I know. Excalibur P4, get in touch. You've got yourself a nifty drop, mate. You're straight to the front of the queue. You've jumped the 9.
29. Yeah.
All right, we've got our winners. If y'all DM UpOnlyTV, or I'll DM you because I saved both of the links. Scammers, don't even try. Nobody's gotten me yet. Y'all won't get me. You can't get me. Those are our winners of $1,000 each. Thanks to Blogfolio. Thank you so much to Blogfolio for being our partner. And thanks for all the entries. There are some amazing entries. Everybody needs to just go type in 2:UpOnlyTV and look at latest, and then you can see all the entries that were submitted. They were quite good. I'm very impressed. Maybe we'll retweet a few more. It's not $1,000, but it is some attention.
Kobe, it's more valuable.
Yeah.
Likes on Twitter, they're way more valuable than money. I'm going to trade all mine in one day.
Yeah, same.
Accumulating.
For people that want to check out Nifty Gateway, it's just niftygateway.com. And then, Griffin, what else you want to leave people with in terms of, like, what should they know about Nifty? Maybe what sets it apart? Why should they shop on Nifty?
Yeah, I would say, like, if you want to shop on Nifty, start by buying from the drops. It's a lot of fun. They usually happen at 7 p.m. Eastern time, like 7 p.m. New York time, usually about once a day. And if you click on our drops, you can see our schedule of everyone coming up. Or you can buy from the secondary market. And, yeah, Leon, I would just say, like, we always recommend that people buy to collect, like buy something you connect with, buy something you like really like, and like an artist's work you want to hold on to for like 5 or 10 years. That's what I would say. Like NFT collecting, it's a really fun hobby once you get into it, even though it sounds weird at first. And then, yeah, like I would also be careful because it's addicting. Like you start spending and then all of a sudden it's like you spent like $10,000 and you're like, whoa, what the fuck just happened? So.
Yeah, the most addicting is winning a silent auction. You're like, oh, I feel really good about that. I will enter more silent auctions now just for the like rush.
Dude, or like, I don't know, buying a piece and then like, yeah, just hold on to it for like 6 to 12 months. This piece behind me I bought for $40. It was trading at 100 for a couple months and now it's at 15,000. Like, I would just hold. Like, we really have no idea where the NFT market will be in like 5 to 10 years, but like all signs point towards bullish. So yeah, just like play the long game, just like.
And thanks so much. And right, buy, hold your NFTs. They are all going to 15,000 guaranteed. That's financial advice. It's not financial. It's not financial advice. And Ian, chat, you gotta tell the chat, are they gonna make it or are they not gonna make it? You gotta decide for them. You're the fortune teller.
Wait, who's gonna make it? What does that mean?
Everyone in chat, everyone watching, are they gonna make it or not?
Everyone's going to be great. It's going to be perfect.
Everyone's going to make it. Did you hear that? We're all going to make it. We're all going to make it. Thank you both. Thanks for coming on. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Peace.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Can I just, before we go, can I highlight that I did, with Kobe, nice sunglasses, and then I did get fireworks for the dadgum stream, and I feel like I just need to show them because we're like, we're so close to the all-time high. But nevertheless, we got the fireworks. I got them prepared. Thanks everybody for being with us. Follow our guests on Twitter and check out Blogfolio. It's a great way to trade. Rate the show on iTunes. We need iTunes ratings because Apple will push us to the top of the podcast charts, and that helps us, helps more people find the stream. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Hey guys, that's fun.